Hello, everyone. This is Betsy Wurzel. You're a host of Chatting with Betsy on Passionate World Talk Radio Network, a subsidiary of Global Media Network, LLC, which is a subsidiary of Global Media Network. Oh, I said that, LLC. Why, I'm not with it today. Our mantra is to educate, enlighten, and entertain. The views of the guests may not represent those of the host of the station. Folks, I'm always excited to do my show, and with me today is a first-time author. I'm going to give you some background. My guest today is John Robert Still, that's S-T-I-L-L. He is an attorney. He's author-writer of Intercessor, a novel, his first book, which was a finalist for the prestigious Audie Award in the fiction category, up against established New York Times best-selling author. So congratulations to you, John Robert Still. The book
Thanks,
is
Betsy.
You're welcome. Intercessor, a novel. Can't forget to say the name of the book. that helps, right? So I want to welcome you, John.
Well, thank you for having me.
And with Betsy, oh, you are welcome. It is my pleasure. How, you were an attorney. Can you tell what kind of attorney you are?
Basically, boring. I'm not boring.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm kind of boring. But the type of work I do is more corporate work. You know, I'm not really in the courtroom that much. So it's more a lot of desk work and working with you know, corporations and companies and things of that nature. So it's corporate law.
Oh, okay. I have heard of that. And how did you find time to write a book? I know attorneys are very busy.
Well, that's – yeah, absolutely. It's – I've traveled to New Orleans quite a bit for my job, so I had had a lot of business meetings down there, and I was it was 2017, and I was leaving a restaurant on Bourbon Street, and it had just rained, and so the streets were reflecting, you know, the neon lights, and it just looked like a movie set. And I was just kidding with some friends of mine. We were texting, and I said, you know, this would be the great beginning of a really bad novel, maybe of the Mickey Spillane variety, but not saying that he's a bad author. And so, you know, I just started messing around, and it just turned into a novel. I don't, you know, Betsy, I'm not really sure how it beyond that, it just went from a joke to a serious, you know, effort, I guess. And really, though, I guess I've typed most of it on my phone, with my phone.
Wow.
Probably 85-90% of it I did, but that allowed me to, you know, during the down times, like you're waiting on a plane or waiting in a doctor's office or whatever, just to type when the mood strikes you. And so I didn't sit down at a keyboard and wait, you know, for the inspiration. So I didn't really have writer's block. I just, you know, when I found the time, I said, I'll type a few sentences and then it may go from there. So it's very unorthodox way that I did it, but, you know, it was my first one and, you know, I didn't know how else to do it.
Ah, that is an incredible. I think you're the first person I have interviewed that has said they did it on their phone. I have to say, of course, on audio, so you can't see the cover of the book, which is why I encourage people to go, you know, Google, go on Amazon, look up Intercessor, a novel. Your book cover is very intriguing to me. It looks, when I looked at it, you could tell that it's mystery and it's almost like mystical. To me, it looks like the fog and, you know, it's just interesting. How did you come up with that cover design?
Well, That was painted. I have a friend of mine, Louis Guidetti, and he's an excellent painter. And I told him what I wanted, and he painted it. And it's Pirate's Alley, which is on the left, as you can see, just part of it is St. Louis Cathedral in New Orleans, and then some, whatever buildings are on the right. And so I told him what I wanted. And then he added a little bit more to it to give it that mystical feel. So I was very happy with the way it turned out, and that's the story on that one.
Yeah, that's I like it. I really do. It's very eye catching. And how did you come up with the title, which is interesting, Intercessor?
Well, I didn't have a title until I was, finished with the novel. I didn't know what to name it. I kept thinking about in the book you have people interceding or, helping someone along the way, praying for them or, pleading their case. Like Miriam in the book was kind of Jim's intercessor. She interceded for him in a lot of ways. And it reflects back on the, I guess biblical intercession, and so that's how. It's just it's a word that you don't see that much, and it just came to me. But it took me a while to finally give it a title.
Well, that's unique. You need something. I feel eye-catching, right? I know people go to a bookstore, they look on Amazon. And it's a cover and the title, I think, that really catches someone's eye. When I think of intercessor, I think of the Bible. I think of Jesus intercessing for us, the Holy Spirit doing it. So that's what I thought of. So your book has a lot of spiritual undertones, right. But themes going on in it. Well, New Orleans is a character in the book, the town. Then the main character is Jim Hampton. You have Miriam. How did you come up with the story? That's what amazes me about writers. How do you come up with the story and dialogue? It's just fascinating to me because I can't write, John. I can't. I'm lucky if I can write a paragraph. So when people come on my show, and I always love to ask everyone, how did you create the dialogue for these characters? Because that really, it fascinates me.
Yeah, you may be surprised that you probably can do it. I didn't think I could do it either. But I came up, well, New Orleans, I love New Orleans, and there's so much atmosphere to it, and I wanted it to be one of the main characters. And so I originally was going to write about New Orleans and maybe have some kind of ghost story aspect to it, the mystical side of New Orleans. And then at the time I had gotten back from Bosnia, where I went on a pilgrimage, and the Virgin Mary was allegedly appearing over there at Medjugorje. I was curious. I went over there, and so I worked that into the plot. I think this book, there's something for everyone in it. I mean, despite whatever background or belief system, because it's a mystery, a thriller, a ghost story, I mean, a success story of the human condition. And really, it's kind of an age-old story, good versus evil. It basically transcends all cultures and periods of time. And so I know that was a very long answer to your question, but
No, that's fine. That's fine. I never really appreciated really writers until I started doing my show. And then I realized how much time a writer puts in to writing a book. I mean, I've talked to people who took 7 years of research to write a book.
Right. I can definitely see that happening.
Yeah, because I think, like, how long did it take you to do your research
Well,
to do your book?
most of the research was on hurricanes and some of the, some of the other plot lines, but it didn't take as much as my next one is, but it took I wrote it in 2 years and did research in, throughout that time period. A lot of it, and you probably saw in the book where I was very specific as to where Jim was in New Orleans. Like he goes to Bourbon Street, then to Royal Street, and it may have become tedious, but I just wanted to capture New Orleans, and so someone who is from New Orleans or is familiar with it would know exactly where where it was happening. And back, I forgot, I didn't answer your question about dialogue. Now, dialogue, I just, in my head, I'm thinking, now, how would I, how would I have a conversation about this? And you think about talking to a friend, like you ask questions, and then you get answers, and it just naturally comes that way. So you could do it, and there's no question in my mind.
My hat is off to all writers, and I really have come to really appreciate when I pick up a book of, I think about what time went into that. It's just incredible. And everyone's creative process is different, which is why I like to ask the different authors that come on, different writers, about their process. So your main character is Jim Hampton, who is a lawyer. Also, is any part of you in your character?
Well, yeah, people who know me, they read it and they think, oh, is this an autobiography? I'm a lawyer. I haven't quit my job like Jim and would not be brave enough to do that, right? But as a lawyer, you write. I included aspects of the law in there, and yet from that perspective, and also personally, when you're writing, you write about what you know and your experiences. So some of that is going to be based on my history, life, but it's a fictional character overall, though.
I understand. Sometimes people put themselves a little bit in the book, and I don't want you to give away the book. I wish I would have gotten a copy, John, so I didn't read your book. I read about your book, which sounds fascinating, by the way. But to me, New Orleans, when I think of New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans, I'm from New Jersey. See,
Right.
New Orleans. And what I've, seen of it in, like, on TV or in movies, it is very, like, it has a spiritual side. They have a big thing for Fat Tuesday, and, they celebrate, they celebrate the beginning of Lent. And they also have,
Right.
like, their, I don't want to call it, I don't know if it's voodoo or like their dark side, their dark magic. I don't know if that's the proper word.
No, that's
And
exactly
that's
right, yeah.
what, yeah, that's what I think about. So your book, is that the forces? But I'll give it too much away of your book. Is
No,
that the
no.
forces you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. There's a kind of a duality in New Orleans. You have voodoo shops, and then you have churches everywhere. It was steeped in Catholicism way back into the 17th century or whatever it was. I mean, New Orleans has been around a long time, so there are beautiful churches down there, and there's a strong strong Catholic population down there, and so you have that on one side, and then on the other side you've got the voodoo shops, and you've got all the partying and the live for the day kind of thing, which is not necessarily evil, but so you it's you have solemn a solemn side and a more fun side, and then you have good and evil mixed in with all of that. And so I wanted to, that's my original thinking was just to write a kind of supernatural thriller set in New Orleans to underscore all that's going on down there and then I introduced some spiritual things, and ultimately it's a book about redemption, someone coming back to their faith, and in the meantime he's running from a murderous cult that's chasing him through New Orleans, and he's got this hurricane coming in. So it's just a mixed bag. It's got everything in it, but ultimately the end, he finds he's a lost soul, and he finally comes back to the faith of his childhood, and it was kind of a long and winding road, but he gets there. But some people ask me, there's going to be a sequel, and I haven't planned it yet, but there's a journey that never ends, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, John, because how many times have people, and I talk to a lot of people, how many times have people had something happen in their life and they lose their faith? They blame God, they lose their faith. And sometimes people will go through a transformation of they either get away from God and blame God, or they get closer and realize, I need his faith to get me through this situation.
Right. And I think Jim, because I think he thought of faith as being something that exist only in childhood, that he was too mature for that, and then he meets Miriam, who he has such a great amount of respect for, and she's not afraid of her faith, she's very open about it, and it kind of gives him permission to think, maybe I should look at this again. And and so you're right, he's not necessarily an unbeliever, but he's uncertain, and he's kind of gone dry in his faith, and is looking, he wants to believe, but he's cynical, and Miriam brings him back to that faith. So yeah, you're right. People do lose their faith, and they can always come back to it.
Yes. And then, there's some people who think that having faith is a crutch, or, it's for children, and they don't realize just how sustaining and important faith is. And I think especially as people age, it becomes even more comforting.
Absolutely. It gets him through some really rough spots in this book. And he realizes how important his faith is to him. I think we all go through it. We have periods of doubt, and good times and bad times, and we question, or at least I have. But ultimately, it comes back to faith is faith, right? Faith, right? So you don't, you're not gonna ever have proof. You just have to believe.
Absolutely.
I didn't send you a copy. I should have sent you a copy of the book. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's all right.
But
your next book.
Right. So faith is an important part of the book. I look at some of the miraculous. There's still miracles that take place in this day and age, and I refer to some of these miracles that have happened over the centuries, some of them have been documented, and I did research on those, and I weave those into the book to to let people know that there is this supernatural is out there. There's miraculous things that are happening, and this is not the end of us. There's an afterlife, and there's a lot of good out there. So in a way, it's just evangelizing, but not. It's all taken from the perspective of a skeptic through his eyes, and it's not trying to beat people over the head to say, yeah, you got to believe. It's just it's you're learning all this stuff through Jim, who has all the doubts that we all have.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, it sounds like a really good book. Now, how does, if you want to share, how does John meet Miriam for Miriam to help John? Jim. You're John. Jim. Your character's Jim.
I can understand. Well, Jim walks into a bar, I think in the second or third chapter, and there's this bartender, a really striking young lady comes up to him and knows him. And says, hey, how you doing? You haven't seen you in a while. How's it going? How's the legal profession? And he's like, well, have we met? I can't remember ever having met you before. And it starts out that way. And so he just kind of assumes that he must have been really drunk or just forgot who she was, and that's how they meet. And then they strike up a conversation, and she learns, he knows, or she knows he's not from New Orleans. So she suggests that he get her, go out and look around and get an idea and just visit the area, and then has the idea, saying, hey, why don't you come with me? I'm going to go visit my family down in Terrebonne Parish, which is south of New Orleans. And so he's like, okay, who is this lady? she's inviting me to see her family. But he just goes along with it because, what the heck. And they leave New Orleans, and they're headed to see her family just for a day trip. But there's this tropical storm brewing in the Gulf. And as they travel, they're checking the weather, and it's getting worse and worse. So they have to turn around. First, they stop at a friend of hers. And, he goes to a crawfish boil by the bayou. So I try to throw all that stuff in there, And then they come back to face the hurricane. So, but he doesn't know who she is, really. I mean, but he really has a great amount of respect for her because she's, of her faith and her genuineness. And she plays, obviously, a major role in the book, but she's there at first and then not there for a good part of the book. I don't want to give too much of it away.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. Yeah, we want to leave the readers curious. I have to ask this because of the cover of the book and dealing with the supernatural. Is there any scene in your book where people see or they believe that someone's who is deceased, that their spirits are around doing things?
Yeah, and there are all kinds of legends and ghost stories in New Orleans that I mentioned one that was actually in the early 1900s was that there was this serial killer who claimed to be this evil spirit and there's ghost stories coming from that. And there's haunted mansions down there, very famous haunted mansions, and he encounters these things, and then I explain to the reader what the story behind them is. I didn't make those up. Those are, whether they're real or not, I don't know, but it's out there, and I report what other people say. And so there are, one of the people he runs into is is probably demonically possessed. So you have, you know, from that aspect of the supernatural or paranormal, you have the evil. The lady is, you know, she's got this evil entity in her, and she and her little gang of their cult are out for Jim for some reason, and they want to, they're trying to take his life, you know, for whatever reason. So yes, there are ghosts, there are evil entities, there are good entities. It's all in that realm.
Wow, that is, sounds like such an interesting book. I mean, there are people, I believe, John, that there are people who are, have the devil in them, as they would say. I do believe that. I also believe, because I've experienced it, where
oh, really?
You get signs from someone in the afterlife. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I've gotten signs from my husband. My husband died 5 years ago. And I've gotten signs from him. Now, just this morning, I had this little, it's a little bear in a karate outfit, and it went off by itself. I'm thinking, what is that noise?
Huh.
I'm, you know, doing my morning routine in the bathroom, doing my face. I'm like, is that the radio? What's that noise? The bear went off by itself. It never did that before.
That was this morning?
Yeah, yeah.
That- that's a little scary, or it could be a good thing too, right? I mean,
yeah. Well, you know what? I always say, hi, Matt. I know you're telling me you're around. So I've had some really strange things happen, and that's the only way I could explain it. I mean, I know people might think that's all woo-woo and may not believe it, but when it does happen to you, you're like, what the heck? That never went off before.
Right. I've never had those experiences, but I've talked to people who have, and I believe it. So that's really interesting. That's really interesting. You have
yeah.
a certain gift in a way.
I mean, I didn't believe it either. I didn't. And I have gotten, like, signs. I'll tell you a quick story. Maybe you have something like this in your book. Oh, matter of fact, you could relate to this. We had a really bad storm. I live in New Jersey. We get a lot of rain. It wasn't a hurricane. We've had that. But this was just torrential downpours. And my basement got flooded. And I was laying in bed, and I was, like, in tears because I spent all night wet backing, you know, with the wet vacuum. Mm. And I saw – and it's the one time I saw, Matt, I wish I was with you. And, John, I know what I saw because my shade was down. I saw a big star on my shade, on my window shade. And I said, that's you telling me everything's going to be okay. I know what I saw. I didn't see it again. But I know what I saw, and it's just
yeah,
it's
no,
just
that's,
really
that's really heartening. All right, you know, just a sign like that. That's great. I mean, because I'm sure you're just
yeah.
at your wits end there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was wondering if you had like, not something. The same, but I mean, like similar things going on in your story where people might
right.
have seen visions or something like that.
Yo, there's definitely that in the book. Yeah, I haven't,
yeah.
Like I've not seen that myself, but I have seen what I believe to have been demonic possession and priests. And this is over in Bosnia, and I've never seen a UFO or Bigfoot or any of that. So, I mean, I just, and it could have been mental illness, but, and it happened a few times when I was over there, but a person would just start screaming and cackling and like this, like a low kind of like, if you turn on an AM radio and it's not on a station, it's just kind of static. And then it sounds like two or three voices coming out. And then, you know, these priests standing around and they're praying and the entity or whatever it is just and just writhing in pain. And it's very unsettling until you see it. It's hard to believe. And I asked the priest, I said, have you ever seen, he was coming, he was over there from the U.S. I said, have you ever seen that? And he goes, no, I've never seen it. I mean, he says, I know it exists, but I've never seen it. But, and as I say in the book, though, that the church has to, has to investigate. They're not just going to believe. They've got to have, if someone claims to be possessed, they have to go to a psychiatrist, and they want to make sure that this is not mental illness, or that this is truly an evil entity. So the church is always very cautious about that, and they have to be. But that was that was my only supernatural encounter, and it was pretty unnerving.
Yeah, I could imagine. And does
In a
your
way, it makes you
character?
think.
Oh,
I'm
go
sorry,
ahead.
go ahead. No, I was just
No,
saying,
go
in a way,
ahead.
though, it makes you say, wow, okay, if this evil truly exists, then that means there's good too. There means there's the good stuff that we can't see, right? The spiritual realm where, there is God. So that is almost faith affirming, even though it's a kind of a horrifying thing to see. And you're going to ask if there's Jim experiences that, he sees that in the book as well. And I use that experience that I had to describe what Jim was seeing. So, and some people say the book is scary, which obviously, and it is to a certain extent, but it's not all horror. There's a lot of suspense. It's like I say, it's got a lot of things going on.
Well, it sounds like it would make a good movie.
Yeah, someone told me that. If anyone wants to make it into a movie, I'll be more than happy to oblige. So,
That sounds really like it would make a good thriller movie. I also
right.
believe, John, that and you can tell me if this is in your book, that I believe we have guardian angels and they watch over us. Because
Oh, yeah.
sometimes people are in, accidents. How do they walk out without a scratch? And yet someone has a minor fender bender and they die. I mean, there's
Right.
things you cannot explain of when someone's in danger and, they get protected. Or you hear about people, I think I might have read this. There was a fire. Some guy got a ladder, went on the roof, got the people out, and they never saw that guy again. Was that an angel?
Yeah.
Could have been.
Yeah, I've heard of that. I think my mother even had an experience like that, that someone just came out of nowhere to help, and then they disappear. And I've heard a lot of people tell me stories like that. And if you believe in God and you have faith, then sure, it makes sense that we all have a guardian angel. But yeah, and that's also, I don't have any of that in the book, but I guess you could say that Miriam is kind of a guardian angel. I don't want to give too much of it away.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, you know what? The Bible says, and I forgot what verse, folks, but the Bible says we entertain angels unaware.
Oh,
So
that's
they
right.
are, we are, they are among us. I mean,
Oh,
well,
yeah.
just 2 weeks ago, John, I was driving. I just went around the block, and I had my son in the car, and I'm at the stop sign looking back and forth, and people drive crazy here in New Jersey. And I didn't see anyone, and I start to go, and my son goes, "Mom, watch!" A car just flew down the street out of nowhere. I came so close to
Wow.
hitting that car that it
Wow.
was an act of God that I didn't, an act of an angel, act of God that I didn't
Yeah.
hit this person. It would have been my fault because I had the stop sign,
Wow.
but I didn't see anyone.
Wow.
It really. I just really believe that. Like, if you're late for something, maybe you weren't supposed to be there at that time. Maybe
right. That's you remind me of a story.
Protection.
A good friend of mine just told me a couple of months ago that he was in Chicago and he was getting ready to cross the street and a bus just came out of nowhere. And he said, literally, he's heard it, but he didn't realize it could be possible. He saw his entire life flash before his eyes, and he felt something pull him back. And people on the other side of the street saw it, and they thought, okay, he's dead. He's gonna, you know. But something at the very last second pulled him back, and it sounds a lot like what you went through there. So. I'm glad we have those angels.
Yes. I believe really, you know, when your number's up, it's up. That's it.
Right.
When God calls you, nobody, not a doctor, no one's going to stop that from happening because, you know, not to be morbid, but we're all going to die at some point. Hopefully later than sooner. right?
Right.
Is John, no, you're John. So is there, does the gym like to cook like John? By the way, folks, if I got to say this in the beginning, that John likes to cook jambalaya, Cajun, and Creole dishes, and you do beekeeping. And
I like
you like cigars,
part
so.
Of the reason. Probably
well,
the reason. My main
like
motivation for cooking is eating. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. But Jim in the book, he cooks some bacon and eggs, and that's the extent of his cooking. He may like to cook. We just don't know. I just never brought that out.
Oh, you didn't bring that out in that character. Might be from New. Yeah, well, I might be from New Jersey, but I do like jambalaya. So
they got good food in New Jersey. They got great produce. They got great, you know. I went up there one time with a friend. They have those hot dogs that are all connected with strings. You know, like, you know, the old, it's just the classic kind of deli, northern deli type food that you don't see down here in the South.
Yeah. New Jersey is very diverse in culinary taste and dishes. I just think, John, that some people, you know, in a lot of books, you see a transformation with someone.
Right.
You see sometimes people going from a tragedy to a triumph. And Hurricane, when I, you know, saw that the book was about, you know, a hurricane coming, did you think about Hurricane Katrina? When that hit New Orleans?
Yes, I did. And actually, our law firm, the summer after Katrina, we did some pro bono work. We went down to New Orleans. Different, you know, lawyers would go weeks at a time, but we had the whole summer of our law firm going down there and helping people establish title to their houses that were destroyed because all these houses, particularly in the lower Ninth Ward, the people who lived there didn't. There was no paperwork that was passed down through generations, so they had to treat it as if the person died without a will. And so, when that happens, you have to track down all the family members and, you know, go through this process to make sure that the person, in fact, you know, has a connection to the property. So, to your point, yes. Yeah, so, I was familiar with Hurricane Katrina, the devastation that it did, and I tried to. You know, I didn't make light of it. I pointed out the suffering and the fears that people still had about Hurricane Katrina, hurricanes in general. And so I definitely had that in mind when I wrote the book.
Well, I forgot the name. I don't know. I can't think of the name of the hurricane that we had. I forgot when
Sandy?
It was. But it had to be at least. No, well, we had that one, but that wasn't so much water, John, as it was wind, and we didn't have power. But there was another, was that Isaias? I can't even remember the name of the hurricane.
That kind of name, I can't remember either, but I know what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
and it happened, and I got flooded. I mean, it, and I had a sump pump. Folks, I'm telling you, I hope I don't see any more in New Jersey. I have a sump pump, and I go in the hallway in a basement, and I see water all over. I'm like, isn't the sump pump working? And it was just came down so fast and furious that the sump pump couldn't handle it. Thank God I didn't lose power. That's all I got to say. Thank God I didn't lose power, because there were places around me that did. I would have been really messed up. And then I said, I got to get something done. Yeah. I mean, it was.
You take all that stuff for granted until it happens.
Yeah. There's so much rain, John. It was actually coming in underneath the floor, because the water table foundation could not handle that water anymore. I was getting water coming in all over, then even places I never had gotten water.
What?
So it is a frightening.
Yeah, and then you had to come in and clean it all up, and it had all the, you know, there could be mold, and it's just, yeah.
Yeah, it's really a scary thing, and I just want to say this to the audience. Please, please, don't tell people who have gone through a hurricane or a tornado or any other natural disaster to be strong. It doesn't help. Saying that doesn't help. They were strong. It's devastating to see damage to your house, damage to, you know, if your house got lost. That is a loss, folks, that people grieve. And people don't understand. A lot of people don't understand that. Yeah. And, you know, just the aftermath of that. So I can sort of relate to the people in New Orleans and, you know, various other places. Thank God I didn't lose my house. But, you know, when you see water coming in and there's nothing you can do, you feel helpless.
Well, you really are helpless, really, aren't you?
Yeah.
So
you live in, North Carolina. Did you get hit by the hurricane last year?
No. Near here. I mean, we're about 2 hours from Asheville and that area, and we're in the foothills, and they got hit really, really badly. And, you know, we went up there and helped some later on distribute clothes that were given and all that stuff. But it was so devastating up there, and they're not recovered. It's going to take a long time for them to recover up there. And there's still people missing. And it was just, it was the weirdest thing. You think you're up in the mountains. Last thing you're thinking about is a hurricane. But it hit them really good. It was really bad. But no, we were about 2 hours away. We had the winds, but nothing really destructive, not to that extent.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm glad you were safe. But yeah, that was really bad. John, as we wrap it up here, what would you like the reader to take away from your book?
I like
Is there anything in particular?
Optimism. Optimism. You know, optimism in that things will get better or can get better, that no one is beyond redemption, that even though it is has religious aspects, it's an uplifting story no matter what your beliefs are, that and you got to keep going, right?
That's right.
It's a journey, and there're going to be good parts of the journey and bad parts of the journey, and it can change very quickly. So people are going to read the book, and they're not going to feel. There's some books that you read, and you just don't feel good. I mean, they're intriguing, and they keep your attention. They're page turners, but you just feel kind of crummy afterwards because, you know, whatever the plot may be, kind of really, really negative. But this one, you're not going to feel bad. You're going to feel good. But it's like a fun house. You're going to go experience almost a fun house kind of a journey with Jim. It ultimately is, it's good though. So that's what I would like people to come away with.
Well, that sounds good. And where can people purchase your book, Intercessor, a Novel?
You can get it on Amazon. It's available both, regular book and e-book, and then Audible. And you can get it at Barnes and Noble. You can, basically anywhere they sell books. You're not going to get it. You can't walk into a store, and it's all online to get it. You can order it online or just download it on Kindle or whatever. But that's where. So it's pretty easy to get.
That sounds great.
I'll send you a copy. When we get off the line, I'll get your address and I'll send you a copy. And I'm sorry, I thought you didn't have one, but I'll definitely get you one. And you were getting ready to say something.
Oh,
I apologize.
Thank you. Oh, no, that's okay. Oh, yes. How can people get in touch with you to tell you about how they liked your book or connect with you?
Right. Well, Facebook would be Intercessor. Intercessor by John Robert Still. Let's just type that into Facebook, and then that will come up, and you can learn a little bit more about it, or just say hello, whatever. But that's how you get in touch with me.
Oh, that is awesome. Well, congratulations on your new book. It sounds fantastic, folks. I would definitely order this book. That sounds phenomenal. Very interesting. That sounds interesting just from talking to you, John. So thank you for coming on here today. You heard John Robert Still, that's STILL, and he is author and writer of Intercessor, a Novel. And all the information about John will be in the blog that Jeannie White writes, who's the station manager and produces the show. And I want to thank Lillian Caldwell, CEO of Passion World Talk Radio Network, makes this all possible. And I want to thank you, the listeners, and if you don't already subscribe to Chatting with Betsy, it is for free on Spotify, Spreaker, iHeart, Amazon Music, to name a few. And I have experts on that can help you have a better journey. And we all need a break. Reading a book, that's self-care, folks. That is a form of self-care, reading a book, getting your minds off your troubles. And I know that I love to read. And as I always say at the end of my show, if you want to follow me, I am on Facebook, Betsy E. Wurzel, W-U-R-Z-E-L. And in a world where you can be anything, please be kind, shine your light bright, because we need that now more than ever before. This is Betsy Wurzel, your host of Chatting with Betsy on Passionate Rural Talk Radio Network, a subsidiary of Global Media Network, LLC. Chat with you soon.
Betsy, you're there?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, hold on, John. I want to disconnect the recording. I'm recording on something different.
Okay.
I hope that...
Thank you for having me on. This is great. I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome. John, if this didn't record, I will have to have you back.
Oh, you...